Find out what the whole world is thinking in The Agenda.
This week on The Agenda, accelerating into the future. Who's really set to win the race to supply the world with electric vehicles? With China's Commerce Minister Wang Wentao in Europe and US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in Beijing this week, accusations of overcapacity in the EV market have been top of the agenda around the world. But with the need for more electric-powered cars only growing as the world seeks to hit tough net-zero targets, where's the sector really headed? Joining me now to consider that question are Tu Li, founder and managing director of Sino Auto Insights, and Bill Russo, chief executive of Consultancy Automobility. Thanks, both of you, for coming on The Agenda. I'll start with you, Tu, because speaking in Paris this week, Wang Wentao insisted that accusations by the US and Europe of overcapacity in the EV sector were groundless. What's your take on that?
I think that if we take a picture in time, he's probably right. I think that some of the issues have to do with this slowdown that the rest of the world is looking at, and building capacity based on former forecasts are probably not accurate anymore. And so there could be a potential for overcapacity in the near future, but I don't think there is a ton specifically in the EV space.
What's your assessment, Bill?
Yeah, well, China market hasn't been a growth market since 2017, except for EV. The market had peaked in terms of domestic sales in 2017. And since that time, ICE sales, gasoline-powered vehicle sales, have declined significantly to the tune of 11 million units. So if there's overcapacity, it's because of this secular shift to EV. So I don't think the overcapacity is on the EV side. It's on the ICE, gasoline-powered vehicle side. And it seems that the rest of the world is concerned about overcapacity in EVs. They're not particularly disturbed about overcapacity, which exists in the gasoline-powered vehicle side. And that's not perceived as a threat particularly to the EU or to the mature markets, which are more fearful of the lead that China has on the electric vehicle front.
So, why do you think there then remains this idea that China is flooding the global EV market with what critics are calling cheap, subsidized EVs?
I think it's helpful for these governments to really try to pave a path to protectionism, and raising these alarm bells, I think, helps them win over public sentiment in their domestic markets. And I think there is a lot of OEM CEOs that are talking out of both sides of their mouth, very scared about Chinese EVs coming to their markets, but also knowing the importance of their brands in the China market and how much profitability they derive from those markets. And so I think it's a delicate balance that they're trying to manage.
In terms of what's driving the Chinese EV market, Bill, Wang Wentao was saying continuous technological innovation, better production and supply chain systems, and as well as full market competition, those are the key factors. And a recent report from Bloomberg would seem to sort of tie in with that and chime in with that. So what do you think the rest of the world could be learning from the Chinese EV manufacturers?
Yeah, well, true. I think this has been a systematic effort over the course of decades, not just recently, building out the upstream and downstream. The downstream is electric vehicle charging, making EVs more convenient. Upstream, investing in supply chain to scale the most key component, which is the EV battery, which China now dominates that battery supply chain. So sort of an effort over the course of many years to create competitive advantage for companies to choose to take it. And Chinese companies took that opportunity and now can provide affordability in the form of an electric vehicle to the rest of the world. And I think when you look at the global average, Bloomberg recently reported that the EV penetration globally is 20%. What brings up that average? Made in China EVs, which are now penetrated more than 35% of the Chinese domestic passenger vehicle sales. And Europe, benefiting from the electrification of the vehicles that are now shipped from China to Europe in the form of Teslas and BYDs. By the way, Tesla is the number one EV exporter from China. Interesting, right? Made in China Teslas. So this is not a game that foreign brands have not been able to play. They chose to not do it other than Tesla.
Do you think that there's a chance that the European legacy brands, if you like, have maybe sort of been left behind while China's been grasping those opportunities? I just wonder how you think, against all of this background, how it all plays into how the EV market's going to develop.
Yeah, I think the foreign brands were not prioritizing EV. They made an effort, but they didn't make the effort in the form of building out all of the capabilities that I described, the battery supply chain, which gives you cost advantage, and investing in infrastructure. That's a key piece of the puzzle that China solved that the rest of the world has not stepped up to.
I think their accounts were too busy counting their billions of dollars in profits over the last 20 years coming out of the China market. And to echo Bill's point, the Chinese OEMs didn't have any expertise, weren't going to catch up on the ICE side. And starting in 2020, when job one of the Made in China Model 3 came off, you've seen this catalyst effect, and NIO was rejuvenated, XPeng was rejuvenated, Li Auto, these companies that you see publicly traded in the U.S. Now we're at 8.5-9 million units in China, and no one else is close. Also, to echo Bill's point, everyone is using China as an export hub, not just Chinese EV brands. Ford is talking about exporting Lincolns. You know, Nissan talked about exporting EVs. GM is already doing it. Polestar is doing it. So, and then Stellantis and Volkswagen are also going to be exporting. So China is an export hub, full stop, not just for EV, Chinese EV brand.
So Bill, absolutely, what then are the real economic implications for European and US legacy automakers of China cornering the EV market and supply chains?
Well, I think the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem, right? And the problem is not having competitively priced EVs, right? They can make an EV, yes. Can they make them affordably? No. Why? Because they didn't configure them properly. They didn't build out the capabilities in the supply chain. They haven't really leveraged, you know, the things that China, the basic capabilities that China has been able to build. And I would say, you know, if there's a road to the future of electric mobility in the rest of the world, that road travels, at least for the time being, through China. There's no way of avoiding the Chinese supply chain right now. As Tu said, they've cornered the market in the affordable electric vehicle battery supply chain.
Well, Tu, this one to you. Xi Jinping has pledged to take China to net zero emissions by 2060. The EU goal, of course, being 2050. Now, to get anywhere close to that, decarbonizing the streets with EVs is going to be crucial. I mean, already about one in every three cars sold in China is an EV. But can China's EV industry continue to accelerate?
I think so. I think that the foreign automakers are going to continue to struggle. I think we'll see their response at the Beijing Auto Show in about 2.5 weeks. There are some foreign brands that will be introducing and launching, unveiling electric vehicles for the Chinese domestic market. I think GM, Audi, Porsche, just to name a few. But, you know, to Bill's point, this is not about subsidies and this is not about cheap Chinese vehicles. This is about innovation. And China has cornered the market on EV innovation, battery innovation. Can the legacies culturally and operationally make that turn while they're still trying to eke out profits from ICE sales in other parts of the world? That's going to be the challenge for them long term. And right now, you're also seeing Tesla kind of reconcile their product strategy because of the China market. So even mighty Tesla is kind of on its heels because of what's going on in China.
And Bill, I wonder what you think in terms of the rest of the world, not just the evolution, if you like, of the EV market in China. What's your outlook there, especially when there are some concerns that there is a slowdown in the growth of EV sales?
Yeah, well, I think that's this is the part that I think gets underreported. 78% of the exports from China in the first 2 months of this year were gasoline-powered vehicles. If the rest of the world slows down with electrification, it's because we put up tariffs to prevent the economies of scale of China to enter into the picture, which means we're going to end up with batteries that are too expensive, with cars that are overpriced, which for the traditional automakers is fine because they'll cash in on the old cash cow, which is the ICE vehicles. But the implication of that is if they slow down, then China doesn't mind. They can sell gasoline-powered vehicles to Mexico, to Russia, to any place in the world that's willing to accept the gasoline-powered vehicles, which is a lot of places right now.
China's manufacturers are starting to dominate not just the sales of EVs, but also supply chains for crucial materials like cobalt, like nickel, like lithium. What's that going to mean for the rest of the world? They can't just say, right, we're just going to sell ICUs.
This is the thing that really motivated China. It wasn't to dominate the future of the automotive industry. It was to achieve energy security and breaking the dependence on oil and gas supply chains, which were not advantaged China, and pivoting an industrial sector toward new energy vehicles where China had the supply chain dominance. That was the prime motivation here. The fact that the rest of the world didn't play or didn't have an interest in prioritizing that, that's not China's fault. Anyone could have participated, including Tesla. Tesla came here and benefited from the policy support that they got from China. That was available to anyone, but frankly, there was only one company willing to do it.
I mean, too, this isn't a row that's going to go away, is it? China's chief industry regulator this week encouraged its new energy vehicle enterprises to accelerate overseas development. Do you think there's a fear maybe that of a full-scale trade war that could be sparked by the EV market?
I think everyone hopes that's not going to be the case. It looks like the United States and China primarily are going to be the two antagonists, because with the EU, the largest automakers out of Europe, they're, again, it's Volkswagen Group has invested heavily into a Chinese EV maker, XPeng, and Stellantis now with Leapmotor. And so it's in their best interest to now help these Chinese brands enter the European market because it helps their bottom line. I think we're also going to start seeing Chinese IP in European sold cars, perhaps in American sold cars in the near future, just because of their dominance in the EV space. And, you know, the rest of the world is still in the electrification phase of transportation. You know, China's in the smartification phase. The market has taken over, competition has taken over in China. And if you see the Xiaomi SU7 last week, you know, 80,000 orders in a day or two or something like that. And so if they want China to dominate the EV sector, they're going to slow down adoption in Europe and the United States or North America. And that's going to be kind of the conundrum that they're in.
I wonder how you see the EU's investigation into Chinese EVs. It began last year. I mean, how do you see all of that playing out?
Yeah, I think just to add a comment on what Tu just said, I think, you know, when the rest of the world hits pause, my experience in the 20 years I've been here is China hits fast forward, right? That happened during the global financial crisis where the rest of the world slowed down their investments and China just went west, and, you know, local brands started to sell in volume that opened the door for local brand relevancy even before the EV. Now when the rest of the world hits pause on EV, China hits fast forward. This is the opportunity for China to really leverage their advantage, which, by the way, is, you know, governments may slow down, but consumers don't. You know, when presented with affordable EVs from China, consumers will buy them, as they will buy affordability from anywhere. It's a universal value proposition. So the question is, you know, what's the outcome of this investigation? First of all, they're on notice. They haven't said they're going to implement tariffs for vehicles made in China coming to the EU. By the way, they exempted Tesla. The number one EV exporter to the EU from China is Tesla. So let's be clear. Two companies represent two-thirds of the EVs going to Europe from China. That's Tesla and BYD, right? So we're really talking about a pretty concentrated market. And if the goal here was to regulate BYD, then BYD's countermove will be to build a factory in Hungary and perhaps other places in Europe. So the effort to fence China off, made in China off, will cause China to go global even faster.
So ultimately, do you think that the future of the EV market is going to be driven by governments or by consumers?
I think it's definitely going to be driven by consumers. We're seeing with higher interest rates, in the United States at least, the sales of the big trucks and SUVs from the US 3 or Detroit 3, that's falling a little bit. And so we've seen a priority from Ford Motor Company in the US at least to try to build a $25,000 profitable small car. And, you know, unfortunately, in the U.S. market, the Detroit 3 very focused on big SUVs and big trucks because that's been the most profitable for them. So they've conceded the small car market to the Japanese, Koreans, and Germans. So it'll be difficult for them to build desirable small cars. But to Bill's point, if they're functional, if they look kind of nice or nice enough and they're priced properly, then they stand a chance. The problem is that the only way that can happen likely to through 2030 is using Chinese batteries.
But if this is all about making the auto sector greener and cleaner, I'm wondering what you think, Bill. I mean, because for the US, for the EU, for the UK to meet their tough net zero goals, how are they going to be able to do it without easy access to Chinese EVs?
Yeah, no, that's the argument against tariff protections, because all that will do is add cost, which will slow down the rate of commercialization. It buys time, if that's your goal. If the policy is designed, if the policy of regulating, or the import, I should say, of Chinese vehicles into your country, then you're basically acting as, in a way that's protectionist for your domestic industry. By the way, the only countries or the only regions that are considering this are the ones that have automotive companies. Mexico's not saying slow down the rate of Chinese imports to Mexico. Australia's not saying slow down the rate of Chinese imports to Mexico. The Middle East, which is very penetrated with Chinese EVs, is not saying that. If you have a domestic industry protect, that's where the tariffs are being considered as a way of slowing it down. But what slowing it down does is it makes the EVs more expensive, which slows down the rate at which you're decarbonizing. So if your goal is to decarbonize, then more Chinese investment is the answer in your region. I mean, I agree that you should try to protect your domestic supply chains. You should definitely localize those supply chains in your region. But you're not going to get there without Chinese companies investing in building those supply chains for you, at least for the next several years.
Bill Russo, Tu Li, thank you both very much. As the market grows, so too does the question of just how green EV manufacturing really is, especially when it comes to batteries. Currently, around 30% of vehicle materials are recycled for new vehicles. Some leading car companies are converting waste into car parts. Volvo is recycling discarded fishing nets into carpets for its Polestar range. Audi is making car seats with yarn from plastic bottles. And Ford is using upcycled coffee beans for headlamp housing. But are global efforts towards a circular automotive future commercially viable? Joining me now is Kiva Allgood, head of the Centre for Advanced Manufacturing and Supply Chains at the World Economic Forum. Thanks for coming on The Agenda. Now, let's talk briefly about where we are now and what the real impact is on the environment of the auto sector going electric.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a complex conversation. I think it's a lot of buzzwords in some spaces. But I think the magic is you're starting to really see the evolution of the automotive industry. And I think at the forum, bringing the multi-stakeholders together, that's the policy side of the house and the manufacturers together to really figure out how do they create an EV of the future, which means that has to be the full production of the product, to how it's designed, what type of plastics are being used, and then you're thinking about the circularity of that vehicle to when it gets recycled at the end. And you're really starting to see, I'd say, transformative designs in products themselves, where you actually see manufacturing using plastics that come from recycled things like car seats, from cars themselves to plastics from other parts of the world, and then they're bringing that into the vehicle at the beginning. They're designing it in so that you're really truly seeing that full life cycle of the vehicle.
But there is a drive to create a more sustainable value chain across the EV industry, as you say, but for now it's still energy intensive. It's still producing a lot of toxic waste from the manufacturing process. You know, car makers reuse, repair, and remanufacture batteries and vehicle components. But I wonder how circular really is the auto sector?
Well, and I say as an industry, there's a lot of opportunity. Again, as I started, it's a complex space and it does involve, you know, the extraction of raw materials, the ability to process those. But there's been a lot of time, I'd say, placed on how do you also ensure that the electricity that you're using is clean electricity, that you're really driving a net zero factory across all levels of the manufacturing life cycle. And the value chain in and of itself is complex. You know, when a vehicle, it starts with raw material, goes all the way through, and you have thousands, often thousands, sub-suppliers. So how do you make sure everyone is playing a part in developing a sustainable product? And that means you do have to look at things like trade. You have to look at things like consumption. Where are you getting your electricity? Is that clean as well? So you really do have to look at all components of it. But what I'd say is that there is a heightened understanding for the complexity of that value chain, and everyone is starting to contribute.
There's also a trend to turn trash into treasure. We've seen Ford using coffee beans, and BMW using fishing nets, and Renault using plastic bottles. You know, are these just, you know, headline-grabbing gimmicks, or are we really going to see a shift away from traditional materials like petroleum-based plastics to those recycled from waste?
Yeah, I mean, I think the petroleum side of the place best plastics are going to the wayside. I think we're starting to see new innovative chemicals. The IP and the innovation that's been associated with plastics in the past, people are looking for new ways. Actually, the jacket I have on today is made from recycled materials. And I think, you know, that is what people are going to require in vehicles, period. I also think that the supply chain constraints that we saw during the pandemic really have taught people to think differently. It's accelerated that pace of change to adopt new technologies, new techniques, new suppliers much faster than they have in the past.
We need to talk about how much it's all going to cost and who's going to pay for it. You know, is recycling auto materials commercially viable, or are we just going to need to have big subsidies for years to come?
I think, you know, this is probably one of the covers, multi-stakeholder. That's what the forum does well, right? And bringing those parties together. I do think it is costly today to make that transition, but we do have some really good examples of states and markets that have invested early and often into renewable energy. The Tamil Nadu in India is a great example there, where they've attracted a lot of new manufacturing because they've put the early investment into renewable energy. And so if you are manufacturing in that state, you get access to that. So I also think that really it becomes a competitive advantage for a lot of different states and markets and regions as people look to transform where they manufacture their products. I think it becomes a competitive advantage in some markets, and actually it becomes a money maker versus necessarily a money consumer.
You mentioned markets like India, you talked about CATL, but what is it going to take to get battery recycling technology to where it needs to be, and who is leading the charge?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have markets like China, you have markets, you know, I think the UK and the UE regulations have definitely played a part. I think the US is trying to lean in as much as they possibly can and bring manufacturing back. The Reinvestment Act is definitely going to play a role in that. And I think they're now starting to think through, what does that actively mean? In all markets, I'd say one of the key pain points that we've been hearing is really attracting and retaining talent. How do we get people who really want to work in a factory? And that's going to come with attracting the digitally native, the younger people, and really talking about how manufacturing has transformed, and the fact that these are jobs that you can be a digital technician now. It's not just a dirty, dangerous, and ugly job anymore. These are roles that are attractive roles. But that's a key component to the ability to really transform the markets in the United States especially.
Let's talk a little bit more about China and how you see China balancing that industrial ambition with ecological environmental responsibility.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think EV adoption, they definitely led the charge as well. And I think they've had a lot of the IP associated with kind of managing that transition. But it's going to come down to government and policy, which is, you know, I think one of the things that is pervasive in all markets right now. And I think in China specifically, with the population and the eagerness to kind of adopt and attract the new tech, they'll have a chance to actually kind of leap forward more so than some of the other markets.
Keep it all good. Thank you very much. Coming up on A Future Agenda, as Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz heads to China, we'll examine the state of the relationship between Beijing and Berlin. But for now, from me, Juliette Mann, and from all of the Agenda team here in London, goodbye.